is Free Speech Radio News for Thursday, November 11, 2004, Veterans Day. At WBAI in New York, I'm Deepa Fernandes. Palestinian leader and Nobel Peace Prize winner Yasser Arafat has died.
For Palestinians, Yasser Arafat is not only a leader, Yasser Arafat is a father.
We go to Ramallah, Gaza, and get international reaction. And the U.S. military assault on Fallujah continues.
They will show what they have ceded, and that's defeat. And that's many, many, many other black body bags.
But first, these news headlines.
I'm Randy Zimmerman with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. With more than 1,000 U.S. soldiers killed in the most recent invasion of Iraq and more than 4,000 injured, Veterans Day commemorations around the nation still omit the plight of some veterans. Sarah Turner with the Workers Independent News Service reports.
This Veterans Day, past and present members of the U.S. Armed Forces are facing many challenges.
Harvard recently released a study that estimated the number of veterans who have no medical care at about 1.7 million.
David Castine is a director of Operation Truth, a nonprofit veterans advocacy group. He says that persistent underfunding of the VA hospital system has caused many sick or disabled veterans to have to wait for months for care.
Oftentimes we're dead last on the legislative priority list. And, you know, just as an example, in fiscal year 2005, they plan on cutting 10 VA hospitals and a little shy of $1 billion from the VA budget, even though we're still in a war.
The Army has even tried to refuse benefits, claiming illnesses are due to pre-existing conditions.
Once you're out of the military, the VA only has to provide medical coverage for ailments that are related to your service. And it's easy for the VA to say, we don't want to deal with this. We think this is a pre-existing condition, and you're not going to receive treatment.
With the Workers Independent News Service, for Free Speech Radio News, I'm Sarah Turner.
British government officials say they will be evacuating about 400 of their nationals from the Ivory Coast, citing escalating violence. After days of anti-French violence in the former colony, more than 800 French nationals left. Ivorian officials said that French troops fired on some of the protesters, killing four people. International aid workers put the number of injured in the first 3 days of violence at between 600 and 700, but said it was difficult to confirm the figures. The Ivory Coast, the world's largest cocoa producer, has been under a tenuous ceasefire between a government-controlled south and a rebel-held north for the past 18 months. Government forces launched an offensive in the north last week. The United States is named as one of the world's worst human rights abusers, along with buyers of British weapons and close British allies, in a just-released report. Naomi Fowler has more from London.
Tony Blair is the first foreign leader invited to visit the White House since George W. Bush's re-election. This Foreign Office report published yesterday may be mildly embarrassing for Blair. It describes the abuse of Iraqi detainees at the Abu Ghraib prison in Baghdad as shameful. It also reiterates the British government's position that the remaining four British citizens imprisoned in Guantanamo Bay should be returned to Britain. Critics say the wording of the report doesn't go nearly far enough, and it reflects the unwillingness of the British government to condemn the use of torture and other illegal practices if they're carried out by a key ally. Many of the countries accused of systematic human rights abuses in this government report are also among Britain's biggest arms customers, such as Saudi Arabia and Indonesia. Organisation Safer World says this casts doubt on the government's own stated human rights criteria when issuing arms export licences. This is Naomi Fowler in London for Free Speech Radio News.
This morning, Israeli police arrested a nuclear whistleblower, claiming he has given unauthorized interviews to foreign journalists. Mordechai Vanunu was jailed in 1986 for discussing his work at an Israeli atomic reactor with a British journalist. His interview led many to believe that the Middle Eastern state has from 100 to 200 nuclear weapons. The Israeli Defense Ministry has Vanunu under tight surveillance and claims Vanunu will disclose more state secrets given the opportunity. Courts have regularly rejected his appeals to leave the country. Rising sea levels will have a dramatic impact on the Gulf Coast of the United States in as little as 10 years, according to research presented this week. From KPFT in Houston, Erica McDonald reports.
Even according to the most moderate predictions of a half-meter increase, sea level rise will likely create a domino effect endangering bay habitats and coastal wetlands. Leading the study is Rice University professor John Anderson, who said other factors related to global warming, like the melting of polar ice sheets, would further increase the rate of rise.
Now, if the ice sheets, and particularly the West Antarctic ice sheet, are in fact contributing to sea level rise, the rates of rise could well be more in the order of a meter over the next century. And at that rate of rise, we're going to see some pretty profound changes in our coastline.
Anderson recommends government controls on development along the Gulf Coast, where hundreds of thousands of homes lie at sea level. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Erica McDonald.
And I'm Randy Zimmerman for Free Speech Radio News.
Sounds from a Ramallah memorial demonstration today as Palestinians across the occupied territories mourned their leader's passing. Tears and fierce praise were the dominant reactions from Palestinians to Yasser Arafat's death. Arafat spent his entire life fighting and struggling for the restoration of Palestinian land, for a sovereign Palestinian state, and for his people's freedom. During the course of this struggle, he tried, but sadly failed, to strike an agreement with Israel that could have led to peace in the Middle East. We begin our coverage with FSRN's Awad Dwabes, who's in Ramallah.
I am at the gate of the compound where Yasser Arafat was held for the last 3 years and where Yasser Arafat will lay down tomorrow, will be laid down tomorrow. The reaction, we have seen a severe shock among Palestinians this morning. We had at least thousands of Palestinians gathering in front of the gate, repeating the sentences that Yasser Arafat used to repeat, saying that Yasser Arafat will be buried in Jerusalem one day, and also promising Yasser Arafat that they will continue his trip. Also, we heard a lot of slogans saying that Yasser Arafat is the people, is the Palestinian people, and the Palestinian people will never die. It is a mixture of sadness and also anger. And also, we heard some slogans saying that he was poisoned. This anger among Palestinians that Yasser Arafat was died in a very mysterious way. Actually, till now, we don't know why and how he died.
President Bush gave his condolences to the Palestinian people, calling Arafat's death a significant moment for the Palestinian people. Australian Prime Minister John Howard was scathing in his criticism of Yasser Arafat, saying the leader would be harshly judged by history as he did not do enough to curb terrorism. Shimon Peres, former Israeli Prime Minister who shared the Nobel Peace Prize with Yasser Arafat, also implied that Arafat gave his blessing to terrorist acts that harmed the peace process.
I do believe objectively that Arafat and the Palestinian people could have achieved much more if they would go to the political road and negotiate than to go to the terroristic front and fight.
European leaders marked the passing of Yasser Arafat with tributes and expressions of regret as well as hope for progress in the region. French President Jacques Chirac visited the Percy Military Hospital near Paris to bid a final farewell to Yasser Arafat.
Je suis venu m'incliner devant le président Yasser Arafat et lui rendre.
I addressed the Palestinian people and its representatives a message of friendship and of solidarity. France will, of course, continue to act relentlessly for peace and security in the Mideast.
Au peuple palestinien et à ses représentants, un message d'amitié.
Awad, we've seen world reaction coming in. Some people have called him a freedom fighter. Some people have called him a terrorist. Can you describe to us what people around you feel Yasser Arafat has given to the Palestinian people?
Yes, for Palestinians, Yasser Arafat is not only a leader. Yasser Arafat is a father of a nation, but also a father of each one of them. The large majority of the Palestinian people were born after Yasser Arafat started his struggle against the Israeli occupation. So for Palestinians, it was Yasser Arafat who led Palestinians to the international recognition and to the international legitimacy. For them, it is Yasser Arafat who kept the Palestinian cause alive. For them, it is Yasser Arafat who refused to give up Jerusalem and the right of return for refugees in the year 2000. So for Palestinians, Yasser Arafat is not a terrorist, he is a freedom fighter.
How much of a setback for the movement for Palestinian statehood is the passing of Yasser Arafat?
I think that most Palestinians are saying that we had a great loss when we lost Yasser Arafat, but the statehood dream is something that Yasser Arafat fought for all his life, and that the Palestinian people will continue this fight until he gets his statehood. Now, in a political term, some observers think that Israel has lost the only pretext that it is taking in order to stop the peace process, saying that Arafat is the obstacle. Now, Arafat is gone, so supposedly there is no obstacle. But from a popular point of view, Arafat has installed, first, the Palestinian national identity, and second, he put, before he died, the seal of any future agreement in Camp David. That is to say that no one will be able from the Palestinian leadership to accept less of what Yasser Arafat has refused in Camp David. So this is also a very important political factor for Yasser Arafat and for the Palestinians.
Meanwhile, across the occupied territories, Palestinians have come out in the tens of thousands demonstrating their grief and rage as Israel began a new incursion today. We go now to FSRN's Mohammed Halaini, who is in Gaza.
I have been stuck here in the Gaza City because the checkpoints are closed right now, and I'm in Gaza, just in the front of one of the biggest demonstrations, just which was ended only a few minutes ago. And this demonstration came by all the Palestinian factions: Hamas, Fatah, Popular Front, and Islamic Jihad. They came here to participate in a demonstration near the headquarters of President Arafat. Tens of thousands participate in that demonstration, and people began really nervous talking about it and just accusing Israel of what had happened to President Arafat.
Can you talk to just how much of a loss is Yasser Arafat to the people of Palestine and the movement for Palestinian statehood?
According to just an interview that I had with one of the people today, one of those people just who's called Fuad, 25 years old. He was weeping near Arafat's poster. And when I asked him, when I had an interview with him asking what is the meaning of Arafat or losing Arafat to you, then he answered, "Is that a question? It is my father. Arafat is my father. Arafat is considered the father of all the Palestinians. So what does it mean when my father gets killed?" he asked. The situations are really getting worse right now in Rafah, Gaza, Khan Yunis, and everywhere in all Gaza Strip. Demonstrations, people are going to the streets, people are really furious because they had lost their father. Most of the people were crying from the beginning of the morning as they heard about President Arafat death, and they went in the streets, carrying the tires and distributing the posters on the walls and drawing in the walls and announcing about President Arafat. The mosques began announcing as well about President Arafat as a martyr because he died as a result of the continuous surrounded in Ramallah.
British Prime Minister Tony Blair will be in Washington, D.C. tonight, where he'll meet with George Bush. Top on the agenda is the Middle East peace process, in which Blair has been urging Bush to be more involved. The Bush administration has refused to work with Yasser Arafat. Now that the Palestinian leader is dead, the world is watching whether Bush will re-engage. Mitch Jeserich has more from Washington, D.C.
With the death of Palestinian President Yasser Arafat, Nadi Hijab, executive director of the Palestine Center in Washington, D.C., is hopeful that British Prime Minister Tony Blair's visit here will further encourage George Bush to get involved in the Middle East peace process.
I'm a bit more confident of the U.S. administration because it's a second-term presidency and it can maybe get tough with Israel, hard love, that kind of thing.
3 years ago, both Israel and President Bush refused to negotiate with Arafat, a man who helped put the issue of Palestinian nationalism on the global stage. In a written statement, Bush said that now there will be an opening for peace when the leadership of the Palestinian people step forward. The U.S. will send a deputy secretary of state to Arafat's funeral in Cairo, but not a top official. Bad blood remains between Palestine and Israel. Some believe that Arafat's confinement to his compound brought by the Israelis contributed to his poor health. Nabil Shat is the Palestinian foreign minister.
The last 3.5 years incarcerated in a very small office, which has very little oxygen and very bad sanitary situation, in siege by the Israeli army, have contributed to a variety of digestive tract ailments.
Speaker of the Palestinian Legislative Council, Rahi Fatou, has been sworn in as interim president. Prime Minister Ahmed Correa and new chairperson of the PLO, Mahmoud Abbas, will remain powerful political leaders. Under Palestinian law, elections must take place in 60 days. The composition of the new Palestinian leadership will determine whether the U.S. and Israel return to negotiations. Josh Block, a spokesperson for the powerful Israeli-American lobbying group AIPAC, says such a return will be conditional.
The question there is, will there be a leadership that emerges that is seriously committed to fighting terrorism, literally taking away bullets and guns and bombs from folks who would go commit terrorist acts? Are they willing to build an economy that's transparent, to eliminate the kind of corruption that has bankrupted the Palestinians' society and economy and way of life? Are they willing to speak out against teaching children that the way to honor their families is to go blow themselves up and murder people?
All you've seen in the last 3 years, or all you've heard on the media, is Arafat is an obstacle to peace. You haven't really seen what's going on with the Palestinians on the ground.
Again, Nadi Hijab with the Palestine Center.
Between 93 and 99, you had 6 full years of negotiations under the Oslo Accords. And during that period, the number of Israeli settlers in the West Bank and Gaza doubled from 200,000 to 400,000. And this was Israel's policy under both Labor and Likud governments. So when you come to the year 2000, you have a lot of people amongst the Palestinians say, you know, negotiations haven't led us anywhere. And Arafat's popularity and the popularity of the PLO dropped. So you have Palestinians saying, look, roadblocks are increasing, land is disappearing, olive trees are being ripped out. So what's the point of negotiating? And some went back to violence against the Israelis.
Now, I guess in the next 60 days, there will be supposed to be elections. What do you think will happen with that?
To have elections, you're going to have Israel withdrawing from the cities and the towns. You're going to be able, the Palestinians will have to have freedom of association, freedom of speech, freedom of movement. They'll have to move between the cities and the villages and the towns. And so let's see if the Americans can swing that. And if they can, you will have a truly national leadership, which then, whether you like the look of them or not, you can't marginalize. They will be the national leaders.
For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Mitch Jezerich in Washington.
The U.S. military assault on Fallujah, meanwhile, continues, with the latest FSRN correspondents Salam Talib and Dar Jamil report from Baghdad.
As street fighting rages in Fallujah, the U.S. military stated today that 2 helicopters have been downed in fighting there. Mangled bodies clutching weapons are strewn about destroyed shopping districts, and the stench of death rises from many areas. Meanwhile, in Baghdad, where another car bomb detonated in the middle of the city, a growing crisis forms concerning refugees from Fallujah. The Iraqi Red Crescent have announced that over 1,500 families are now living in the desert on the outskirts of Fallujah. The Iraqi government said that some of the tens of thousands who fled the city were ill and living in cramped conditions. While up to half of the population of Fallujah may have stayed behind, many people in Baghdad are concerned about their plight, as well as angry about the situation. Fatima Gray Bui, a professor of history who is working with the Iraqi NGO Student Relief.
Some humanitarian organizations are stealing. They don't put the supplies in the right place. They don't care about the situation, only how much they can benefit from it. I know that we will bring 1,000 tents, so you can imagine the number of people coming here. It's a huge number. This is not the only time they are leaving Fallujah. They are going to their relatives and friends once, twice, and now this is the third time, and it is too much. Some of these are very big families, and they are now just going to the desert. Many of these people don't even know what the war is for. But even if they fight, they are Iraq, so it is their right to fight.
A military force of 10,000 soldiers, fighter jets, and heavy artillery are being used to pummel the fighters in Fallujah, a city of 300,000 people. Brahim Jinzil, a 28-year-old Iraqi man in the Al-Adamiya district of Baghdad, expressed his concern.
Even if the negotiating about Fallujah failed, they still shouldn't have come with these heavy guns and airplanes. It is too much for a small city.
So many Iraqis are being killed in the fighting. Many of the resistance being comprised of young men are fighting, as they believe, for the freedom of Iraq.
We wished that the situation may have changed for the better after Saddam, but it may have gotten worse. It has gone from bad to worse. The main reason might be the fighters, but we don't care what the reason is. Everyone is taking part in this. We are very sad, not just me. Maybe all the Iraqis are like me. Sunni, Shia, Kurd, Christian, they feel sad about this situation. People in Fallujah, Najaf, Sadr City, Karbala, everywhere, we are all Iraqis. This huge number of young guys being killed every day, we wish they would be a part of Iraq's future.
The assault on Fallujah, where residents say wounded children are dying from lack of medical help, food shops are closed, and power has been cut, has angered people in Baghdad. So many civilians have died in the fighting in the city that people have resorted to burying their dead in gardens. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Dar Jamail and Salam Talib in Baghdad, Iraq.
The U.S. military has decided to take on Iraq's most important organization of Sunni clergy. As bombs rained down on Fallujah, American troops in Baghdad raided the homes of the Secretary General and the spokesperson of the Association of Muslim Scholars. Earlier this week, the clerics had called for a boycott of upcoming elections and urged members of the Iraqi army to refuse to fight their countrymen in Fallujah. In response, the Pentagon admitted hundreds of Iraqi soldiers deserted. FSRN's Aaron Glantz continues our coverage of America's assault on Fallujah.
George Bush praised American troops in Fallujah during a Veterans Day celebration today. Most of the American media are reporting U.S. forces have taken 70% of the city.
They are making us proud. They are winning.
But those familiar with Fallujah say the Americans' quick advance is a mirage. Imad Kaduri is a former Iraqi nuclear scientist. He says resistance fighters have simply withdrawn into the shadows to inflict maximum casualties on U.S. troops.
This is a typical guerrilla warfare. When you have a strong force attacking you, you melt away. You don't stay there just standing there to be shot by these soldiers. And actually, apparently the news are coming that they have set up, in a sense, for them, traps. They let them go in open streets. They think that they have had the field. The American soldiers, they go inside, and then they attack them, as happened today.
Since the assault on Fallujah began, resistance fighters have staged daring raids in Samarra and Bakuba and taken the center of Ramadi. In the northern city of Mosul, Kurdish officials told an Australian newspaper much of the police force had joined the resistance. In Kirkuk, insurgents bombed an oil pumping station.
The basic issue here, the cause of all this terror, is the American presence. What do they want from Iraq anymore? Saddam is captured. There's no weapons of mass destruction. They brought in all these terrorists in Iraq. What do they want? What do they expect to achieve? The real world, they will sow what they have seeded. And that's defeat. And that's many, many, many other black body bags. They keep counting. It's now 1,150. Keep on counting.
For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Aaron Glantz.
On this Veterans Day, President Bush spoke at Arlington Cemetery honoring those who fought in American wars. He also defended the war in Iraq by calling Saddam Hussein a tyrant who now sits in a prison cell. As ceremonies take place around the country, speakers at the Veterans Parade in New York City called for funding for veterans' benefits. FSRN's Leanne Caldwell has more.
In Midtown Manhattan, veterans gathered to honor their military service. Elected officials that took the stage spoke with admiration and appreciation, but added that veterans need fully funded services for when they return home. Senator Hillary Clinton from New York.
There are thousands of young men and women coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq who are grievously injured. They deserve our support, and they deserve a country that fully funds their health care for the rest of their lives.
Veterans' hospitals are being relocated to accommodate funding shortfalls and to reflect the veterans' population that's moving or retiring to the Southwest. The government is proposing to close the largest VA hospital in the country that's located just 3 blocks from the start of today's parade. Ben Chitty is a Navy veteran from 2 Vietnam deployments. He said the federal government is not considering the number of aging baby boom veterans of the Vietnam War who will soon need hospital services.
It's the one facility that they need to keep open because of the way the transportation flows in and out of the city. So if you have a population of aging veterans dependent on public transportation, to close down the one hospital that's accessible to everybody in every borough, as well as from northern New Jersey, and make them go out to Brooklyn or to the Bronx or up to Westchester County, is just nuts.
He continues to say that Congress needs to fully fund the VA program to keep all hospitals open. 200,000 soldiers from the first Gulf War were classified disabled, and tens of thousands have been wounded in this Iraq war and in Afghanistan. For fiscal year 2006, the Bush administration proposed a VA budget of $900 million less than VA Secretary Anthony Principe said was needed. On the war in Iraq, veterans' opinions vary as widely as civilian opinion. Joe Calabria is a veteran of the Korean War. He said the war in Iraq is justified because America has to protect itself.
It's appropriate what we had to do. We must remember, we were attacked.
But Iraq didn't attack us.
Part of it. They're part of it. They're part of it. How? Because they were in a group. There's a group there, a coalition that gets together and decides what they're going to do. Behind the scenes. People are not aware of that. These are behind the scenes. You got to read between the lines on some of these things.
Vietnam War veteran Weber Tournier rode in the float called the Military Order of the Purple Hearts. He sees the Iraq War as another Vietnam with no end in sight, and that the United States should never have invaded Iraq.
Hell no. There's no reason for this. No reason at all. You know, this is, I don't know what to say.
A series of veterans and families of soldiers groups formed after the start of the Iraqi war to voice opposition. Alex Rybov was in the artillery unit of the Marine Corps. He co-founded Iraq Veterans Against the War.
We shouldn't have entered the country to begin with. You know, since the war started, it's been such a tremendous waste of life on both sides.
Operation Truth formed when Paul Rykoff and other soldiers returned from Iraq discouraged with the war. They created an open and anonymous forum for soldiers to publicize firsthand accounts. Rykoff says the war is detrimental because the soldiers don't know what the end goal is.
Right now, we don't know what the mission is. What is the mission? There's no WMD. Saddam's been captured. And if you say it's to stabilize and maintain security in Iraq, fine. But when is that over?
With the battle in Fallujah intensifying and a recent report that listed over 100,000 Iraqis have died, President Bush has given no timeline of an exit strategy. For Free Speech Radio News in New York City, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
Free Speech Radio News is produced at Pacifica Stations WBAI in New York, KPFA in Berkeley, and KPFK in Los Angeles, and community radio station WMNF in Tampa, Florida. For an archive of today's newscast or previous FSRN stories, go to www.fsrn.org. In New York, I'm Deepa Fernandez.